keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario. My stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah, just nod your head with it. So explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it. No scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool. Hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind. Oh no, it's ponderoso, dope. So no overdose, cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd no, we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV and the antimedia.org/radio. Really happy to be back alive and well on this Monday, October 16th, 2017. And what a crazy time to be alive and a crazy time to be able to speak out and, you know, talk about all these interesting and crazy and corrupt and amazing things happening all around us, around the world, and around the universe. There's just so much information coming in and for us to dissect and kind of, you know, decode and break through the propaganda, because it's just nonstop. You know, and as you all know, this news cycle has just become absolutely insane. So it's made our job quite interesting, and you know, can't say that we, you know, are, you know, ever bored. We're never bored anymore, because it's just nonstop, constant things going on, and the whole state of the world is beginning to shift. And I guess we're going to talk about that stuff. We're going to talk about some contemporary domestic things going on. Of course, first, I guess I want to kind of touch on this Harvey Weinstein thing and all that. But I've got a special guest tonight in studio. I'm actually in a guest studio tonight. I'm in Birmingham, Alabama, joined by my partner in crime at the Anti-Media, S.M. Gibson. What's up, S.M. Gibson? How are you doing tonight, man?
Doing good. How's it going?
Great, great. Hopefully everybody else out there is doing good as well. I've been out here in Birmingham, Alabama for a couple of days now, came out for the weekend, hang out with you and, you know, get some work done and, you know, do some things and check out some amazing soul food. I mean, we've been eating barbecue like every day.
Yeah, we've had a lot of barbecue.
It's just not the same back home in San Diego. It's just not the same at all. I mean, don't get me wrong, we've got a few good places in San Diego too, but it's a lot different being out here in Alabama and having the real down-home, country food. And we actually went to the Alabama football game, which, you know, if anybody is at least slightly aware of football, Alabama football is probably the biggest college football team, the best college football team. They've been in first place for, like, what, 3 years now, at least. You know, I won't go too far into that because, you know, I know you guys aren't listening to our show tonight to hear about football. So, you know, I think we may be joined by Jake Anderson in a few minutes, and Dee Schwartz should be joining us as well. So we're going to have an interesting show. We got nothing really scripted out here. We're just going to start going freestyle, and we're going to start talking about some stuff that is on our minds, and I guess, stuff that's being talked about all over the country right now. So first, I guess I want to talk about the Harvey Weinstein thing. You know, this guy is like big time Hollywood. Was he a producer? Director?
Yeah,
I don't know what he did, but
a production studio, and they funded many movies.
Many of your favorite movies are probably helped done by this guy. But come to find out, and now these allegations aren't that new, because he's been accused of several things for a long time.
It's been an open secret for years.
Yeah, and so for whatever reason, the floodgates have finally opened up, and this guy is coming under major scrutiny. He's being accused of many different sexual, from sexual harassment to sexual assault to straight up rape, all these horrible things going on with this guy. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk recently about, you know, sexual assault and pedophilia and all these horrible, horrible things going on in this country, and also just in generally speaking and within powerful circles all around the world. I know there's a lot of high-profile British cases as well recently. And I think a lot of this stuff became a more trending topic after that, all the Pizzagate stuff that was going on. You know, think of it what you will, I think a lot of the Pizzagate stuff was overblown and just turned into a bunch of conspiracy stuff. But the fact of the matter is that there are very powerful people in powerful places, rich people, that have really nasty fetishes and nasty, you know, things that they do with women and with children. And it's just all around not a good thing. And it's sad to see that this stuff is happening, but it's good to see that these guys are finally being outed for what they've done. And so this Weinstein thing is just, I think, just scratching the surface of what we're going to start seeing with people being accused left and right. And probably, you know, of course there's going to be people out there, but there's going to be people just jumping on and say, oh yeah, I got, this happened to me too. But, you know, let's not rush to these judgments. And, you know, I think many of these cases are very credible. And normally it's not just, you know, when a guy's got an issue like this, it's not a one-off thing, right? It's like, it's not like, oh yeah, one time he did one thing. It's normally, it's like this person did this a lot of times. And it's really sad to see it happening in a situation like this where, you know, the guy can hold an actress's career over her head and say, well, if you don't do this sexual thing for me, well, I don't know if we can give you this role in this movie or let you be the star, the lead actress in this movie or whatever. And this is a really, really troubling phenomena. And it's by no means limited to Hollywood. I want to talk a little bit about the political people that do this shit, because, I mean, like I said, the Pizzagate thing was, you know, viral as hell a while back, and it was, you know, thoroughly debunked by the mainstream media, but, you know, people took it way too far. That guy that went and shot up the damn pizza parlor in D.C. and said, Hillary Clinton is running a pedophile ring out of the basement of this place. The place didn't even have a basement. And, you know, people like that kind of jumping to these crazy conspiracy theories, it again, goes a wrench into the work of people genuinely looking into these issues and genuinely trying to get to the bottom of it. And, you know, we deal with the same thing with the Las Vegas shooting, where there's all these conspiracy theories. Nobody's really most people aren't backing up their theories with facts. And so, therefore, it's really easy for the mainstream to say, oh, look at these crazy lunatic conspiracy theorists and all these crazy theories and all this crap. You know, get in the way of the work that needs to be done.
There's one story I want to mention, something that actually I saw this week. One of these cases, which is 1,000% not conspiracy theory, it's admitted it's all 1,000% real. He even went to prison. Is former Speaker of the House Dennis Hastert. A few days ago, Newsweek ran a story about what we can do to make Congress run better. But it was a story by Dennis Hastert. Like, you're running an article and getting the opinion of a known pedophile.
Yeah.
Like, and you're just going to brush that off. Like, we should ask Bill Cosby next, you know, what he thinks about the state of Jell-O. Who cares? It's everybody, you know, the secret's out. We all know that this is very real, and for whatever reason, the people in Newsweek just decided that was a great idea and looked the other way. I can't say that there was any rational thought that went into that, but that's kind of the nature of this. When you hear, you know, a lot of people use the term rape culture, I think Hollywood in and of itself and very powerful people have surrounded themselves with a legitimate rape culture, not just some kind of thing in the ethos, but we're talking, whatever your belief about Hillary Clinton, it's hard to deny the fact that she was close with Harvey Weinstein, and now we know what he did. It's hard to deny the fact that her top aide, Huma's husband, Anthony Weiner, is now in jail for being a pervert. We all know that about Bill, her husband. And then, of course, the very suspicious nature of John Podesta. That's more kind of on the outskirts. But Weinstein's confirmed. Clinton's, Bill's confirmed. Anthony Weiner's confirmed.
Yeah.
And she surrounded herself with these types of people in her life.
And these sick fucks, I hate to say it that way, but, you know, it is what it is. They make their way in the high places. And a lot of it is enabled by the fact that they are in high places. You know, a guy like Weinstein, if he was an average Joe, broke, you know, nobody, would he have been able to sexually assault that many women? Probably not. Maybe he would have done a few times. But the fact that he's this rich, powerful Hollywood guy who calls the shots on these movies, like I said, he can tell an actress, hey, well, I'm not sure that we can use you in this role unless, you know, we go and, you know, we go do something that I want to do, and, you know, I don't want to get into the details of it because it's, you know, traumatic shit. But, you know, not only do these high places attract these horrible personalities, but the fact that we allow people to become this powerful in our society also enables them to commit these acts like Weinstein and get away with it for so long. I mean, this should have been stopped the first time he ever did it. It should have stopped.
We have a lot of people who are, of course, some of the victims, I'm sure, are scared because you have somebody that's very powerful like Harvey Weinstein. I mean, this story almost ran, I think, what was 2003 or 2004, and it got squashed. We have Courtney Love, who mentioned it in the public in 2005, and she got blacklisted from the Weinstein. So, again, this is something that has been known for a long, long, long time. And through fear, intimidation, people, you know, chose not to speak up. My question is, and honestly, I mean this, who has Harvey Weinstein upset for this to
finally stick?
Right, for it to finally stick. It's not like we just learned this yesterday.
Yeah, these accusations have been coming out for years. They never stop. Right. Well, the media never really wanted to pick up on this and turn it into a big story. All of a sudden, Weinstein is the biggest story of the week, and of course, you got to ask why.
It's like Bill Clinton. Everybody knows what that's about. And, you know, we've had Juanita Broderick herself on anti-media radio. Like, we know these stories, and the majority of people are just kind of like, eh, whatever.
Yeah, and in fact, the mainstream media will attack the victim. However, at the same time, the mainstream narrative now is that, well, we can't be victim blaming and all that, which is true. We shouldn't be blaming the victim. However, when people accuse powerful individuals who are well connected and are in the favor of the power apparatus, I don't know how else to say it, the accusations don't stick. I mean, look at Clinton. Like you said, Bill Clinton's been accused of doing a bunch of horrible things with many different women. We know for sure about, you know, the what was her name, the woman that got him in Big Trouble while he was president.
You're thinking of Mock Winston, yeah, but the one he actually got in legal trouble for was Paula Jones.
Yeah, so, you know, those two things are for sure. Now, what Clinton did supposedly was consensual. However, you have to take into consideration the fact that he was an extremely powerful man who was dealing with, like, interns, and who could manipulate them into doing things that, you know, maybe they really should have known better or knew better not to do, but they felt like, you know, they couldn't say no. You know, and that's a huge problem. And you know what? There was that trend going on today, the hashtag MeToo. Probably one of the most heartbreaking things I've ever seen. And it just, you know, so many women that I know personally and online have been victimized by many men in like a situation where they have power over them, and other situations as well where there's just predators out there. This stuff happened. It's not exclusive to Hollywood. It's not exclusive to politicians. Now, we should be more, you know, we should obviously not be letting these politicians get away with this crap, but this kind of stuff happens on a day-to-day basis. You know, I would say the majority of women have dealt with some type of sexual, at the very least, sexual harassment, if not sexual assault, from the time they're young all the way up until, you know, they're fully grown adults. It's not a one-off thing. It's not like, oh, every now and then it happens to a woman. No, it's like most women have dealt with this kind of stuff. And it's really sad. And you know, the fact of the matter is, I mean, I'm proud of myself for not doing that kind of stuff, but you know, as men, we need to do more to put our fellow men in check and say, hey, dude, that's not okay. Don't be doing that kind of stuff. You know, driving around, yelling at women out of your cars and stuff like that. I mean, it's all fun and games, but you got to put yourself in the other person's shoes, man. It's not, really not. You know, and I know women in my life who that kind of stuff happens to. It makes them really uncomfortable, dude. Like, it really does. And it's not, this isn't the type of way we should be living. It's 2017. We should have been, you know, gotten over this kind of stuff a long time ago and realized, oh shit, we shouldn't be doing this kind of thing. But, you know, anyway, I just want to throw that out there because it's still a big topic and it's trending right now hard on social media and stuff. And it affects way more people than anybody wants to realize or admit to. Everybody acts like, oh, you know, we act like, you know, it's only isolated to a few people, and people get mad when people talk about rape culture and shit. Rape culture, yeah. More than half of the women in this country have been subjected to this kind of stuff, so I would definitely say it's a cultural thing. You know, and so, you know, it is what it is. We got to deal with it, get it out there. I'm probably not the best person to talk about this, you know, because I'm not a woman, and I don't know exactly how it happened. You know, of course, I've had my own experiences. I won't talk about these kind of things, but you know, it's just something to contemplate and think about and figure out, you know, how we're going to address this in the future, because it's not something to take lightly. It's really big. Joining us tonight as well, we've got our awesome journalist Jake Anderson on the line, calling in from Portland, Oregon. What's up, Jake? What are you doing tonight, man?
Hey, guys. Hanging around. Yeah, I've been, watching or, you know, keeping track of this on social media. I actually had a big post I was going to do earlier, and I chickened out, but I'll probably end up posting it. But it's basically just about, you know, I've had multiple people close to me who have been assaulted, and speaking to your point, speaking to this kind of rape culture thing, I mean, I called it kind of a ecosystem of enabling, where we're letting people get a pass on things. And the story I was going to tell, and I haven't posted it yet, mostly just because I see so many guys posting about it. And I really feel like this is a moment in which women should be doing the talking, kind of like what you said. But basically, when I was in my mid-20s, this person I knew essentially told me he had raped someone. He asked me, have you ever raped someone? And I was like, no. And he said, well, I have. And, you know, I don't remember what my reaction was, but the fact of the matter is I didn't say anything to him. I didn't out him to other people I knew, and I certainly didn't report him to the police. And that's the kind of thing we have to start doing, so that people like that can't do it again in the future. It's the same thing with racism. We have to create a culture in which this kind of behavior is so untolerated that they won't do it, or at least maybe will drastically mitigate it, or maybe even get help for, you know, whatever issue they're going through where they feel the need to victimize people. But yeah, I mean, it's a huge issue. And yeah, like you, I've seen all day people close to me posting their experiences, and it really takes a lot of bravery. I mean, here I don't even have the bravery to just post about what I just said. And, you know, people are talking about these very difficult experiences, you know, reliving the trauma of it. And it's really just nauseating, man. I mean, it's so nauseating. I've actually been nauseous for like 2 hours thinking about this issue. And yeah, with regard to Weinstein, Gibson, you were kind of touching upon the history of this, and you asked a really good question, which is, you know, what did he do that finally precipitated this complete shift to taking this guy down? And I'm sure you guys saw the report. There was actually a sting in 2015 where they basically wired this woman and who met Weinstein at a hotel. And he basically, you know, you can hear the audio of her saying, why did you touch my breast? And this sting, this audio is very, it's difficult to listen to because you hear exactly how he manipulates people. You hear the things he says that manipulates them into coming back to his room or capitulating to this. And it's just, it's nauseating. And it's really inspiring that this is finally going down. And hopefully this will spill over into other industries and even into other crimes. You know, imagine if that happened. So, yeah, it's a crazy issue.
One thing real quick I've noticed, too, with our just culture in general, the way that they're treating this, and it's everything in society at this point, it seems like, is it's people aren't as outraged at the crime as they are getting points for their side. So you've really seen the people on the right be like, look at this, you know, this monster, you know, and it's more about, and again, if it was somebody, you know, that was on the right that did it, you'd see the exact same reaction from the left. And it seems like these kind of things have become, it's just, well, you know, our team gets a point because y'all have a monster on your team. And it becomes more about that and less about the actual crime in and of itself and the behavior.
Yeah, and when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Well, and that's why it's important that it happened in a, well, I don't know. I mean, they still tried to politicize it because people were still saying, oh, Republicans were still saying, oh, well, Weinstein was a longtime Democrat. You know, so you can never really. You can never really escape that politicizing, but yeah, I feel like it's significantly less so than if it were a politician, you know?
But the quote that I just read off, let me say it again, I don't think you heard it, Jake. When you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything. Grab them by the pussy. You know who that was, right? I mean, that was the president of the United States. He basically bragging about the same kind of stuff that Weinstein is now being strung up on.
Of course. I mean, that's, you know,
transcends political ideology. It's left, right. It's people that don't vote at all. It's all kinds of people. And this is the thing. I'm sure people today with that hashtag MeToo saw a bunch of women who they had no clue. That you may know them very closely. You had no clue that this stuff happened. I remember the first time someone told me that over half of women have suffered some type of assault like this, I was like, yeah, right, that's bullshit. I couldn't believe it. I was like, no way, because yeah, I was just looking at myself personally, and I was thinking like, that's crazy. People don't do that kind of stuff. Like, I've never done that. Why would people do that? Why would half the people do that? Or why would half of women have gone through that kind of stuff? But you know, the more I've been learning about this stuff, the more I realize, shit, it is more than half. And it's such a... It's a thing where women get really ashamed of it. They don't like talking about it. It's really, really hard to talk about. I mean, I've had several women very close to me, you know, break down and tell me about this kind of stuff. It's really, really hard for them to talk about it. And so, therefore, many, many times, no one even knows. Like, a guy will go do some shit like this, and the woman that is victim of it won't even tell anybody because it's so they're so ashamed that it happened. And half the time, they get blamed for it. Like, well, were you drunk? Were you at a party? Were you dressed a certain way? Were you doing this? Were you doing, well, what did you do to deserve this kind of stuff? It's like, half the time, people get blamed for the shit that happens to them, you know? And so, that's part of the reason why this is so prevalent, and part of the reason why people don't realize that it's such a big issue is because it's frowned upon so much to come out and, you know, say this kind of thing. In fact, in some countries, looking back, I think, like, you know, probably this kind of stuff still happens in, like, Saudi Arabia, you know, Pakistan and stuff like that.
Where
if a woman gets raped, they, like, throw them in jail or do some, like, horrible punishment to the woman. And then the guy that raped her can get married to her. Like, what the hell is going on here? You know, and so this is a thing that has been, it's worked its way into many different environments. It's worked its way into many different cultures, many different countries, many different religions. And it's just, it's reinforced within our society by the state. And it's something that we consciously have to address and make it into something that is no longer acceptable. Because ignoring it, pretending it's not happening, you know, acting like only, you know, Democrats do it or only Republicans do it or only rich people do it, that ain't helpful. It's not helpful at all. You know, and so it's a huge issue, dude. And, you know, it's an issue that if we solve it, well, we'd probably be much better off as a species if we solved it, because then there wouldn't be so many people going around with all this hurt and all these emotional issues. And, you know, who knows what else comes along with all this stuff. And, you know, the world would be a better place without it. So anyway, enough of that. I mean, I'm sure we're going to find out more. I'm sure there's going to be more powerful people that get implicated in this kind of stuff. So we're just got to keep an eye on that. So, SM Gibson, what are we on to next, man?
One thing that I wanted to hit on here was the Julian Assange threat directed at Hillary Clinton. He almost directed it at Trump, too, but what he said basically was that Trump has till October the 21st to indict Hillary Clinton, or he is going to release information that will show her guilty of what he says is high treason. On October the 26th, he said that I believe it's her birthday.
Happy birthday, Hillary.
Yeah.
Wow. And, what?
Yeah. And he also, what was the hashtag he used? I believe it was like bleach bit doesn't delete or something to the effect of bleach bit didn't work and we've got some info. I think that's hugely, hugely something to watch and very interesting.
Yeah, that maybe Assange got his hands on some deleted emails, not just the ones that were kind of being held up as, like, classified or whatever, or just not public domain. Maybe Assange got his hands on some of the stuff they thought they deleted. At least that's what he's hinting at, so that should be pretty interesting to see what happens with that.
Let's see, I'll read the statement real quick. This is what Assange actually said. Hillary Clinton's crimes will not go unpunished. If she is not formally charged for mishandling sensitive material, we will have no choice but to release proof that she is guilty of high treason against the United States for selling patented military secrets to the Saudi Arabian government. We also have proof that she is guilty of crimes against Russia, Uzbekistan, Lithuania, Caledonia, and Brazil. Put her in prison and put her in prison, saving her from the severe punishment several of these nations would impose.
Sounds pretty specific.
Good Lord.
Wow.
So, yeah, we shall see what comes of that, if anything. Does anybody actually believe that she will be charged with anything before October the 21st? I highly don't see that coming. So, will Assange release this?
He really hates her.
Yeah, he does. And, you know, there was that talk of her getting droned, or her droning Assange if she were to win. I don't know if that stuff was true or not, but, you know, there's obviously a very personal beef between Hillary Clinton and Julian Assange that is yet to be settled. Now, I've also heard that Assange is running into problems with the Ecuadorian government, and that he may lose his home at the embassy sometime soon. That would mean that really bad news for him. You know, he would probably be arrested, and who knows what would happen with all that. But, you know, that poor guy has been stuck in this embassy.
If he does release something like this, it just puts Hillary away, and there's no way we can hide from it or run from it anymore, then you would think Trump being Trump would be like, all right, come on over. We're done with all of this. Like, you would think, wouldn't you, just for political points, not even for the right reasons, just to score points.
No, I mean,
I don't know. I mean, you would think that, but surely Trump is smart enough to realize that Assange is, he's probably next on Assange's list. I mean, don't you think it's probably inevitable that he's going to be leaking stuff on the Trump presidency?
Probably at some point, I would assume.
Once Trump's done doing his own damage to the U.S. government, then maybe Assange will start leaking stuff out on him. You know, I think that's a possibility for sure.
But maybe you're right. Maybe Trump would view that as a way to keep Assange in check, even though it probably wouldn't work. But maybe he would view it as a way to contain this guy. You know, this is the same guy that had the FBI director into his office and basically said, you know, I can trust you, wink wink. You're gonna help me out, wink wink. To the freaking FBI director. I mean, it's like what an idiot, you know. So who knows?
Assange, like, if he's been locked up basically in jail for the past ever how many years, even though he's in the embassy, I mean, he's stuck in this one, two rooms, whatever it is. I mean, it's not like he's living on in some mansion or in some huge compound. And he hadn't been able to go outside in forever other than just stepping on a balcony. So you would, if, you know, he was allowed to leave and come to the United States, Trump, I could see playing that piece as leverage to, like, okay, you got freedom now.
I'll tell you what.
Your freedom.
If I was Julian Assange, if I got out of that embassy, I'd go live on some tropical place somewhere on some beach. And I'd never see foot in the United States again, or in any Western.
I would. I'm the same, man. There's no way.
Because it's just not worth it, man. And shit, I got like 1 foot out at this point. I'm like, shit, I can't wait to get out of here. It's getting too stupid.
I don't think Assange would come to the United States, though. I think he would, like you said, I think he would go off somewhere.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, sitting on a beach somewhere in Central America, just soaking it in on the beaches.
Well, you would think it would probably go to Ecuador, as good as they've been to him.
Ecuador, Costa Rica, something like that. You know, there's a few countries down in Central America, Honduras, and that aren't really, you know, aligned with the U.S. exactly.
Well, you know, he'd go to Russia.
Yeah, he'd be in Sochi, chilling at the Olympic ski stadiums or something. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, he'd probably be safe in Russia because, you know, that's where Snowden's at. And Snowden, as far as I know, has been pretty safe. Although I haven't heard from Snowden in a long time. Hopefully he's doing okay. I'm going to look into that tomorrow, and now that I think about it.
Doesn't he tweet religiously?
Yeah, he does.
He probably does. I'm not on Twitter, so I wouldn't know. But, you know, hopefully he's doing okay. So, speaking of Russia and, you know, that area in general, major, major ground-shaking things going on right now in Europe. First of all, news today, Austria elected the youngest European prime minister, who goes by the name of Sebastian Kurz, Austrian guy. I wouldn't call him alt-right, but he's a far-right candidate, more of a nationalist-leaning, anti-immigration, anti-European Union politician. So this is in addition to what's going on right now with Catalonia. So and of course Catalonia is just the latest shifting of the political sentiment in Europe that we see going on. Europe is shifting gears, man. Like there's storm clouds gathering over Europe right now that in the next couple years stuff is going to be happening that is going to be changing the world. Because, you know, Europe historically has been a very, very violent place. And that's why when people are like, well, whenever people are like, oh, well, you know, Muslims have been killing each other for 1,000 years. Well, what the hell do you think they've been doing in Europe all this time? It's not, you know, Europe has been a very violent place for a very, very long time. Both world wars were set in Europe. And before that, those kings were killing, you know, fighting each other forever. They've been fighting each other since the dawn of the city-state over there. Ever since these guys started creating countries, they started killing each other off. We're overdue. I hate to say it like this, but Europe used to have big wars like every, you know, several decades. And it's been, World War II ended in, you know, 1946. It's been like, what, 70 years since then? Europe is long overdue for some kind of major conflict, and I hate to say it. I hate to say, you know, this is going to happen, because hopefully it doesn't. But it definitely seems like Europe is now going back to its old ways of nationalism, because the neoliberal European Union, which I guess in theory was created to prevent big wars, that has been shown to be not, you know, neoliberalism is failing all over the world. I mean, that's partially responsible for Donald Trump and responsible for a lot of things going on. You know, Marine Le Pen in France. I mean, this stuff's going on all over Europe. You know, the UK just did the Brexit thing. Scotland trying to get independence from England. Ireland's been fighting for its independence for, like, a really, really long time.
Northern Ireland.
Yeah. Northern Ireland's been fighting for a long time to break off. So these old divisions between Europe are starting to resurface in a very, you know, we're not to that stage yet, but similarly to what we saw in the lead up to World War II, where you had, national fascism rising, I think first in Spain, right? And then Mussolini and then Hitler. We're starting to see the early stages of that stuff right now. And it's not going to be pretty in Europe over, I would say, the next decade. Something's going to happen. Something not good. And also in Germany, I don't know if you saw this. Germany far-right parties are gaining major ground against Angela Merkel, who I guess is like the neoliberal queen at this point of Europe. So things are changing, man. Things are changing quick. And what's really sad to see is how the Catalonians are being treated by world powers. I mean, everybody is basically saying, no, we back the Spanish, and we don't back freedom, basically, because that's all Catalonia wants is self-determination. And what more of a democratic value is there than fighting for self-determination, right? The EU is saying, oh, we don't want them to do it. China is saying, we don't want them to do it. all the powers that be are basically saying, no, we don't want Catalonia breaking off and doing
it. I mean, it is certainly ironic that it's only countries with oil that we want to have freedom and be independent. But when you've got, especially a city as like Barcelona, they don't want that going. And clearly that's what a lot of it has to do with.
Yeah, because look, they don't want to say this. They want to act like, oh, well, it's just a principle thing. We just don't want our country being split up, and you know, we just want to be, you know, we want to have Spanish unity. Let's dig into it a little further, because look, Spain is on the brink of insolvency. I mean, they got like between 20% and 30% unemployment. They got massive debt issues. Can't pay their bills. Barcelona is the or Catalonia is the best performing area of the entire country economically. If Catalonia broke off from Spain, guess what? Spain's done. Spain goes bankrupt. Spain goes insolvent. Spain has to get bailed out by Germany and by the rest of those guys in Europe. So everyone else over there is not trying to have Spain get bailed out. They're trying to temporarily prolong the inevitable, and they're saying, well, we don't want Barcelona to go because we believe in Spanish unity, and we believe that, you know, Spain is stronger as one country. But the truth is they're like, shit, our house of cards is kind of hinging on Spain remaining intact, because we need them to steal the money from Catalonia to pay their bills, to pay back the European Union, to pay back Angela Merkel and Germany and stuff. So it's much bigger than this bullshit that you're being told on TV, like, oh yeah, it's just this thing. No, it's a lot bigger than that. The whole house of cards is on the verge of falling down. I mean, I hate to be the doom and gloom guy, but these are the facts, dude. Like, the whole lot of the areas of the European Union are on the verge of bankruptcy and insolvency, and it just goes to show how neoliberalism is failing all of those countries. The only reason those countries were okay before was their colonialism. They had colonies. They colonized Africa. They colonized the Americas. They colonized Asia. They colonized Oceania. I mean, France still got all their colonies all over the, you know, these islands all over the Pacific. That's why those countries historically were able to stay afloat, because they were jacking other countries. They were jacking Africans and Asians and Native Americans for their resources, and you know, they're appeasing their people by handing out a bunch, you know, doing unsustainable government and stuff like that, unsustainable spending, unsustainable wars and stuff like that. Now that house of cards is coming down, the former colonies aren't putting up with their shit anymore. They lost control. They can't even keep control of their own countries, and it's not just Europe. The United States is having independence movements of its own. California, Texas, the Pacific Northwest, New Hampshire has its Free State Project. I mean, this idea that people want more self-determination, it's not new. It's been appeased for a long time from neoliberalism, but now the cracks are forming. And that's another reason why the United States doesn't want to see Catalonia break away, because they don't want California saying, oh, well, Catalonia did it, maybe we could do something. Right? Like, they don't want other people getting ideas. And then, same thing with China. One of the reasons, and we covered this on the Anti-Media today, go check out got a couple of articles recently, actually. Chinese president to cement power as China takes role as a global superpower. And we actually have one article about specifically about China and why they're backing the Spanish government over Catalonia. Well, because China is dealing with its own independence issues. Why China's support of Spain against Catalonia independence makes sense. It's from 2 days ago on the antimedia.org. Well, pretty simple. China's got, you know, Taiwan, who has been, you know, trying to break away. And they have autonomy and stuff like that. And what's the other? There's another island out there that they don't have control over. Is it Shanghai? No, it's not Shanghai. I can't remember what it is. Anyway, we'll see. See if I can find it.
But I do think, though, you're right, and the general consensus is from every major government especially, you know, the quote-unquote world powers, is going to be in defense of Spain over Catalonia, just because they don't want other people thinking that this is a good idea. They don't want people getting ideas wherever it is throughout the world. So possibly will we see civil war there? I think it's likely, just because, I mean, they had a vote, I don't know, was it 6 years ago, whatever, a few years ago, and they voted 80% to leave, and then they didn't get their way. And then now they voted 99% to leave.
90.
Was it?
Yeah, 90.
Whatever. And will they leave? I don't know. I don't know. But I think people are ready to go, and I think they're at their boiling point. They, a lot of people don't realize this, is that 95% of the people actually speak, they have Catalan language.
Yeah.
And it's the ninth most widely spoken language in Europe, even though the EU doesn't list it as it's one of the 24 official languages of Europe. It's actually the ninth most widely spoken language. So they have their, you know, we're seeing nationality, and even with Trump and the Brexit, we're seeing it across the globe, and this is just another facet of that, but something that has actually been going on much, much longer than anything that we've seen in recent times with other places. This has been going on for a long time, and there's a lot of history there.
Yeah, and so the thing is, too, is that, look, I think all the quote-unquote powers that be have let it be known that if Spain want to go in there and crack down, they could. I mean, Spain went, when they were trying to have this referendum, Spain, you saw the video, Spain sent their cops in there and were beating the hell out of the people trying to vote. They were beating the hell out of the Catalans trying to vote, and they were shutting down polling stations. I mean, if Iran was doing that, imagine how the U.S. would be like, I can't believe they're doing this. They're not letting their people vote. In fact, Venezuela just held an election, and the U.S. said, oh, the government didn't let everybody vote, therefore the results are, you know, illegitimate or whatever. So whenever it's someone who we don't like, we say, oh, you guys are trying to break up elections. But then Spain went and sent cops in, like, what, they sent, like, God, the number was huge. I think it was either 10,000 or 40,000 cops the Spanish government sent into Catalonia to try to shut down the vote. Where was anybody outraged? Like, where was the U.S. government? Where was the EU, who supposedly, you know, these people supposedly value human rights and they value democracy and democratic values and, you know, Western democracy and all that bullshit. Bullshit.
It's funny, the one time the United States minds its own business.
Yeah, it's fine. Well, it's not our business this time. if Iran was doing it, if Venezuela was doing it, if Russia was doing it, if North Korea was doing it, anybody that we don't like were doing it, oh, that's a huge deal. But, oh, Spain sent cops in to go crush a vote? Oh, well, I guess we don't need to worry about that. That's none of our business. Okay. But here's the thing. Look, let's be realistic here. If and when Catalonia finally says, you know what? We're done. We are now officially declaring ourselves independent from Spain. Spain's going to invade those guys, and they're probably going to kill a bunch of people. And you know what the United States is going to do? We're probably going to help Spain do it. Just like when Hitler helped Spain and the fascists rise back in the 30s, we're going to help the Spanish government preserve neoliberalism over there and take away
from they would just more than likely just turn a blind eye.
No, yeah, we turn a blind eye, but we'd sell them a bunch of tanks and helicopters to go take care of business and look the other way as they're killing their people. That's what we'd do. And then if they lost, well, then we'd say, well, we didn't do anything. We didn't jump in, so.
Oh, if they lost, we would just be like, oh, we supported.
We supported you guys the whole time.
Yeah, we supported Catalonia the whole time. What are you talking about?
yeah. Now, the elephant in the room of independence movements around the world is Kurdistan. And this is big because Kurdistan isn't saying, oh, well, we might declare independence from Iraq. We might, you know, want our own sovereignty. No, Kurdistan is like, you know what? Fuck you guys. It's war. We're done. We're independent. And if you want it, you gotta come kill us for it. And guess what? That's actually what's going on right now. The Iraqi government, as we speak, is invading Kurdish territory. They already captured parts of Kirkuk, which is, surprise, an oil-rich area of Kurdistan or Iraq, whichever way you want to look at it. So the Kurds, who have been getting fucked by every government in that region, including Turkey, Syria, Iran, and Iraq. All those countries have fucked the Kurds over and over again, repeatedly throughout history. And, you know, we all remember when Saddam Hussein launched chemical weapons at the Kurds and killed who knows how many of them. And the U.S. gave him the weapons to do it. And then later on, we're like, oh, well, we can't stand, you know, Saddam Hussein, he used chemical weapons on his own people. Oh, by the way, there were weapons that we gave to him. But we won't mention that when we're trying to get you guys to support our war in Iraq. But, you know, that happened. So the Kurds have been screwed so long, dude. It's the saddest thing to see these guys. And again, just in the last couple years, the Kurds were the only ones really fighting ISIS. They were the only ones fighting ISIS effectively. I mean, the Syrian government fought ISIS, but they were fighting everybody. Anyone that wasn't with the government, they were fighting. Not just ISIS. In fact, ISIS, instead of engaging with the Syrian government, they were just fucking up a bunch of innocent people instead, taking territory and stuff. So the Syrian government didn't have to fight them until much later on. Now the Syrian government is beating ISIS, but the Kurds have been fighting them all along. And the U.S. has been arming the Kurds, and we've been backing the Kurds. And that's actually, if we're going to back somebody, those are the people that we should be backing. And I actually don't criticize it that much, even though I don't think we should be arming anybody, really. But, you know, if we're going to arm somebody, it should be the Kurds. And now the Iraqi government is invading the Kurds, and what's the U.S. doing? The U.S. said today that they're having a policy of neutrality. That we're, you know, I'm not even joking. The U.S. said, oh, there's just confusion going on. There's miscommunication. They need to talk better. No.
I mean, this is certainly one of these situations where if they're unable to secede and form their own independent nation, then the United States will go, oh, good, that's what we wanted. Thanks. You know, we're glad there's a unified Iraq. And then if there becomes an official Kurdistan, then they'll go, oh, great, this is exactly what we wanted. We're glad you all got your own country. So who knows? They may arm both sides.
Yeah. Now, like I was saying, the city that Iraq went after was Kirkuk, which happens to be one of the same cities that the U.S. when you know, all right, let's go back for a quick history lesson here. You guys remember when Barack Obama was like, oh, ISIS is the JV team of Al-Qaeda. I mean, he literally said that. Basically, what he was saying was like, ISIS is nothing. Like, we don't even got to concern ourselves with that. Like, whatever, dude, that's a joke, right? All of a sudden, ISIS mops up Mosul, and then ISIS starts taking over Kirkuk, which is an oil region. Most of Iraq's oil is down in the south, right? Except there's this big oil hub up in Kirkuk. And when ISIS took that city, or ISIS was attacking that city, that's when the U.S., Obama was like, well, guys, we got to go do something about ISIS. They're a serious problem. You know, we can't stand for this. They beheaded our journalist. You know, it just so happened that they beheaded that journalist just as they were taking this oil-rich city, and all of a sudden, the U.S. government gave a shit about it. They're like, well, we got to do something about this. We didn't give a shit about the Kurds before this. We didn't care that they were beating the shit out of Iraq before this. But now we got to do something about it. So it's not coincidental that the Iraqi government went to go take Kirkuk. Well, that's because that's where the oil's at. In fact, look, Kirkuk has been a sticking point in negotiations between the Kurds and the Iraqi government. I mean, these guys have been trying to get their independence for a very long time. In fact, right now, they're semi-autonomous, so they do have their own president. they got their own government, but they're still under the jurisdiction of Iraq. So they're just trying to get official independence and become their own country. It's already got a name. It's already called Kurdistan. The problem is Kurdistan would actually take chunks of Turkey, Syria, Iran, and Iraq. So all those countries who basically surround Kurdistan, all of them are going to fight them. They're surrounded on all sides. Luckily, they have mountains, and it's kind of like the Taliban in that sense. I'm not going to compare the Kurds to the Taliban because the Kurds are actually like secular, and they're not like, you know, these extreme, crazy, social, conservative, you know, women have to, you know, if women get raped, we stone them or make the guy that raped her marry her. The Kurds are much more secular, and they're just kind of like more freedom-embracing type people, of course.
But then you've got Erdogan to the north over there of them, and they're a more, especially for the region, one of the more secular nations, yet Erdogan's insane.
Yeah, he's literally Hitler.
Yeah.
I mean, they say that about Trump, and that's bullshit, but, you know, I can't stand Trump either, but he's not Hitler. Erdogan is literally like Hitler. He actually, on various occasions, in fact, you and me, Scott, we're just talking about this today. I was showing you a couple of quotes where Erdogan talked favorably about Hitler, said, well, Hitler had a great presidential system set up. Yeah, I'm sure he did.
That's crazy.
And somehow it's still part of NATO. And after that coup, or whatever that was, I actually think that was more of like an insight, like a reason to crack, an excuse to crack down on people.
Oh, that's exactly what he's done.
Yeah, and he has cracked down on people so hard. I mean, he's turned that place into a pseudo-dictatorship, and he's consolidated power, and he's going around talking favorably about Hitler. I mean, this guy is a nut, and somehow he's part of NATO, which means that we're beholden to that guy if he gets us into trouble. You guys remember when he shot down that Russian jet? That almost dragged us into a big-ass war. I mean, that was big. And so what are we doing aligning ourselves with a guy that's over there talking favorably about Hitler and shit like that? That's crazy. And now they're going around, you know, Turkey's been killing the Kurds for a long time. The Kurds make up like 20% of the Turkish population. And they're completely screwed. They're kept out of the government. They're kept out of representation. They have less rights. They're not allowed to organize. They're constantly attacked. They break up their political parties and call them terrorists. I mean, really nasty things going on in Turkey with the way they treat the Kurds. Everybody treats the Kurds like shit. The Kurds deserve their own country. I don't care if you are sympathetic to the Iranian cause or the Russian cause or to the U.S. cause or to Iraq. The Kurds deserve their own country. Everybody does. People deserve the right for self-determination. And this is why ISIS was able to have so quickly fill that vacuum up there on the northern side of Iraq. It's because Iraq should not be governed by one Sunni religious government when the northern half of the country, or sorry, one Shia religious government, when the northern half of the country is Sunni. And so ISIS comes along, a Sunni extremist organization. There was almost no resistance to them conquering that top half of the country because the people over there were like, you know what? Shit. We probably agree with you guys more than we agree with the Iraqi government. They treat us like shit. Maybe they regretted it later on, but, you know, there wasn't that much resistance. That's why ISIS was able to capture Mosul, a city of, you know, nearly a million people, with like 10,000 guys. With 10,000 guys, they captured a giant city. It's crazy. That had a huge military base where the Iraqi military abandoned ship and left like $1 billion worth of military equipment for ISIS. Crazy things happening. Thank you all for tuning in. We'll be back next week. I'ma let 'em know, through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.